Turns out he's a major cinephile.
They don't watch enough movies! It's a very simple formula!
And here we go.
Well, with last week wrapping up our first three phases of the MCU, it was only fitting to spend this episode of Nick Nack Goes to the Movies on the film kicking off Phase 4. Having seen it on opening weekend, here it is, my first Marvel Theater outing since 2019. For your consideration, and hopefully pleasure, my take on Black Widow. So let's start off with some casting stuff, as we always do on this marvelous podcast. See what I did there? Besides ScarJo, Avi, we have Florence Pugh, who is seemingly being billed as the next Black Widow. More on that at the end of the episode. David Harbour, who does not disappoint as the Russian equivalent of Captain America, aka Alexei, which even after all this time will still be amazing after his newfound friend, also named Alexei, died in the latest season of Stranger Things. Still waiting for that release date for season 4. Rachel Weisz is also here, albeit in a much smaller role than I initially envisioned in the whole getting the band back together sequence. But remember how stellar she was in the two Good Mummy films with Brendan Fraser? They really screwed up replacing her in that third garbage 2008 film. Note to self, do a Mummy episode one of these days. Honestly, this is really the main cast you have to know. And it's a good quad squad. William Hurt is back in a brief role as Secretary Ross, and it kind of tacks on the Black Widow story post-Civil War, so it fits nicely enough in the MCU timeline. The film that follows it is the real question. As of now, go with Spider-Man Homecoming, and we will address and amend from there. This is really the main larger MCU tie. The Robert Downey Jr. rumored cameo never came to fruition, and while something with Chris Evans at the end seemed to make sense, that too was not to be had. The closest we got was some radio voice chatter to Johansson. More on that later too. I wasn't too familiar with O.T. Fagbenlay, and while his role was never fully explained in a trailer, it amounted to little more than a small-scale version of the relationship between James Bond and Q. When you first start this movie, and I was blessed to see it in theaters, with not a wild and out crowd, but a more than filled auditorium for comparison's sake to the Forever Purge or Fast 9, for sure. The beginning has some kids being kids in a not too far in the past, but definitely not nowadays either, kind of reminiscent to like Stranger Things or It Part 1. For a moment, I honestly wondered if I was in the wrong theater, but there is some fun, heartwarming family and sister moments. No clue why young Natasha has blue dyed hair. That was a bit jarring for me. But once we get to what seemed like a normal family, quickly becomes something else, with a pack-up-and-go bag running from the law, Russian spies living among us moment. And no matter what this movie has, the highlight, of course, has to be all the frantic action. And while the beginning has that, it only gets better from there. But only the beginning has David Harbour firing off rifle rounds while perched on a moving plane wing. The casual reveal of his super strength is also a fun, jarring out of left field moment. The beginning of this movie also has some really fun uses of pop culture music. There is some history to all of that in the MCU, but as they normally rely on orchestral tunes for storytelling, this movie found a nice way to use a really good song, American Pie by Don McLean, and have a nice payoff later on narratively. Unfortunately, this movie has some questionable ways of making you like and dislike Harbour's character, from a charming, charismatic spectacle to a self-absorbed, super strong jerk. I like him a ton here, but that beginning scene on the airstrip, it leads into a really cool opening credit sequence of assassins and brainwashing. The movie never quite found its balance of tone of his character, especially because no matter what he does, he's just so damn likable and goofy. Our MCU Black Widow deeper Marvel tie is there and gone in a flash. No, this is not some DC crossover with that flash. But that The Suicide Squad trailer came up again in theaters, and I'm stoked for that in August. But you have Ross hobbling over to storm the castle to arrest Black Widow after having everyone else in the raft to end Civil War. That, of course, is a fool's errand farce, and she somehow is nowhere near his tag and bag squad. And after that, we pretty much just have some Avengers be a team or individual name drops. And that leads to the film mostly being a self-contained and isolated action-packed spy romp. While the Red Room scenes don't fully line up with our first vision into it with Age of Ultron, neither is bad. There would have been a nice touch to see it, though. Julie Delpy is nowhere to be seen here. Instead, we got some large old Russian bad guy running things. And while I'm going to say a lot of good here overall in this episode about this film, there is one thing to know, that this movie sadly does not break the bad villain streak that so many of these movies fall prey to. It very much is like a more serious version of Ant-Man and the Wasp with some more serious stakes to boot. The last real callback to other MCU things comes in a brief flashback, which takes place in Budapest, something that was teased for ages, and sadly the payoff is still very vague. And the no on-camera Renner and Johansson reunion is a true shame for me. We all get a final nod to her defection to S.H.I.E.L.D., made possible by identifying a building, having the leader of the Red Room training facility. That event of them doing things together will still be a mystery to me, I guess. The end final moment, there is something, but there is a lot of story left on the cutting room floor that will probably never be explained. The final chance in the Hawkeye show feels like a stretch to expect it being addressed there. There is some fun with guilt and post-traumatic stress from in that moment having Black Widow, right where she is trying to turn over a new leaf, be a part of the reason a little innocent girl, in air quotes, is killed. More on that soon enough. So if there is one thing to note off the bat, Black Widow is not some dark, gritty film, but compared to everything we got in Marvel to this point, the signature Marvel jests are there, but not nearly as much as other films, and the action, violence is on point. No, this is not R-rated Logan, but almost immediately there is a surprisingly aggressive violence start to one of our seeming hero characters in Yelena Belova. Like, not just stabbing someone, but like a literal gut knife twist too. But to quote Billy Butch from The Boys, diabolical. There is cool spy stuff, like running down rappelling walls to sniper things and really good fisticuffs. The fight choreography is overall stylish and crisp and really cool. This movie is easily at its best when it leans into the darkness a bit. And honestly, it makes sense that it does. The spy storyline and the violent past are all part of what makes Natasha Romanoff who she is, and her solo story should be dark too and reflect that. When those over-the-top violent things happen here, it was honestly shocking in the right way. The people next to me were squirming a bit, which you don't really expect anyone to do watching something from Marvel. Look, the dusting scene was heartbreaking. Marvel does heartbreaking, which fits right at home with parts of their corporate daddy, classic Disney. But rarely does it make you a bit uncomfortable. And that is, to its credit, something I'm all about. I mean, this isn't some horror slasher fest. You want to watch The Fear Streets, check them out on Netflix. Definitely doing an episode on that. That was a new discovery of mine after watching Part 2 very recently. But that air of uncomfortability on the past and with it all still going on, very different from what we had gotten up to this point in the MCU. Their first venture into the spy world is successful. Like there goes at sci-fi, high fantasy, heists, war stories, and more. Pretty quickly, we realize Belova is being controlled and this mind-altering, clearing red smoke puff. And you kind of can see where the plot is going to go from here. Bring down the big shadow organization. Yeah, there are going to be some similarities to things like the Jason Bourne franchise, but the adopted family storyline gives it its unique enough flavor. I won't talk too much about Fag Benlay, but man did he have nothing to really do. The film needed a person to get and give things, and this character did do those two tasks well enough. The one character I really haven't talked about yet is Taskmaster, the main villain. I say that kind of loosely. The reveal of who the character is won't really be some big aha, deep Marvel-tized cut. It's not a former MCU character, and in the end, this badass-looking and fighting character is no more than a better, flashier version of every other brainwashed spy lady. The guilt angle is strong here. Overall, the story has a heartbreaking setup of this gross Russian guy taking all these young girls and killing those who can't cut it, and the ones who live are turned into brain-controlled spies. More so than our original Black Widow that we've come to love. She was trained but still had some free will. That is not the case here. And these two themes tie into who Taskmaster is, which while we all wanted this armor skull mask character who could mimic every action fight scene from MCU fighters of the past to be someone who's evil and in control of their actions, I was nervous for a moment it was going to be a drone or robot like an Adaptoid or something. Thankfully, it was not that. Instead, this physically imposing, amazing fighter is the boring generic Russian bad guy Dreykov's daughter. So there is some true guilt when Black Widow has to fight what had become of her after she seemingly blew them both up to get her fresh start. But once again, we see the first fight. It's up to Natalia and Yelena to join forces to break down the Shadow organization. I mean, neither has the idea up front. The idea of Natasha using her science super friends to make a cure didn't quite work out. And our first modern day interaction between the two sisters, still trying to suss it if the other is bad, the sister-sister fighting is top notch. Even this is surprisingly brutal. And when they fight together, there's a little bit of over-the-top gore from a lady breaking her leg, falling, and some blood is spilling out into the water, and she's made to take her own life with like a fire fist to the brain. That ish was hardcore and so good. This, of course, leads us to the modern-day scene of this snowy action fight, which I'm sure we all thought was going to be the final action moment. Instead, this was pretty early on and actually a prison breakout scene for David Harbour's Alexei, aka Red Guardian. And quick deep cut MCU nod, mistakenly calling him Crimson Dynamo, Russia's version of Iron Man, which there was initial talk of that character being one of the original Iron Man villains in those first three films. Super fun Easter egg. Red Guardian is hilarious when we come to see him. He's obviously super flawed, and there's also no way he fought that Chris Evans Captain America. The timelines really don't sync up with him, Chris Evans' version, being on ice still. But I love this notion of his character going head-to-head with maybe Isaiah Bradley's version of the character, who being just introduced to us in Falcon and Winter Soldier. If this movie had come out when it was supposed to before that show, I don't know, that's an interesting, fun idea that I very much am about. But neither he nor Wise's character, Melina Voskov, are really good surrogate parents, and look, they're spy people, totally get it. To them, it was mostly a front, but obviously, the family love is somewhere buried under it all. You more so see it with Belova and Romanoff. No matter what's what, David Harbour is pretty hilarious when he's on camera. The same can't be said for Wise. She is the no-nonsense scientist with also martial arts expert skills, who has some wild explanation in vivid detail with mind-controlling pigs as a parallel to human livestock of soldiers. That whole controlling an animal, telling it not to breathe and it has to comply, that stuff is insane and once again, very heavy, and I'm here for it. And they do throw a little MCU in there too, citing the Winter Soldier program as a precursor and inspiration for the Widow organization. There are only so many heartwarming moments. But yeah, the adult follow-up to the Remembering the Day the Music Died with Pugh and Harbour singing, it's a really cute moment. I don't even know if I ever fully buy the redemption of either parent figure in this movie. The flaws are both there, from mad scientist tendencies to being self-absorbed. The wrap-up character arcs felt a bit rushed. Now, going into the final conflict, you have to be aware of what was coming next and where this movie fit chronologically into the MCU timeline. We didn't see Red Guardian or Yelena Belova in either Avengers two-parter Stone movies, so you could be expecting someone in this adoptive four-person Russian superhero family to not make it out. So I for sure thought someone was gonna die. Heck, I figured both paternal characters were gonna bite dust. One seeing a redemptive arc for his vanity to save his surrogate daughters and realizing his personal glory was second to their lives and upbringing. And maybe the other would have to pay for her sins of mind control tech and chemistry, maybe falling to Taskmaster. And you were never so safe with thinking Belova was gonna make it either, especially with keen-eyed viewers noticing the blonde hair coloring and the same vest that Natasha had on in her final Avengers films. But to my surprise, not one of them died here. It should not have been a surprise to me, but this was too. The twists and turns, thinking Voskov was a traitor to her small family and loyal to the Red Room, to all being a plan with more usage of this nanomask technology, classic Marvel spy stuff that did work for me. And I was super disappointed with the villain reveal of generic Russian guy, and even the Taskmaster reveal was a bit off. It broke the illusion, and I was really hoping for a character in control of their actions. Yet it fits the themes well, of guilt, giving up free will, and more. But having such a cool character be reduced to a mental servant, I was for sure disappointed. But at least the Taskmaster fight scenes are exceptional to watch, and even those have nostalgia-laden MCU moments. The Black Panther, Hawkeye, and tons of Cap copying movesets. Those are all super cool. The full evil stakes never feel all that bad. They sound quite bad. And we see what the Widow Army can do in small-ish numbers. But the storyline never feels resolved, and like Natasha in this movie, the vast numbers this guy has at his command never felt that crazy somehow. But he was obviously the worst kind of person. And when you think Black Widow is finally going to take him down and this whole pheromone thing stopping any violence to his person, plot hole, they should shoot him from far away. But besides that, it was a fun, harrowing moment. That is, until another spy fake out right out of Ocean's 11, 12, or 13, that she knew this was a thing all along. Seeing her be hit by this guy is a bit jarring, but all that being part of her plan when she needed him to break her nasal passage, and he can't even do that. But the gore and violence of her shattering herself on his desk, holy cow, that was wild and brilliant. I still can't believe Taskmaster didn't actually kill anyone on camera. Her fight with Red Guardian somehow doesn't become him dying. But they really did the same things with her as with Ghost in that Ant-Man sequel. Someone who looks cool, has crazy fun powers and a spooky suit, but they never do anything too hardcore to make them an outright villain. This does seem to be the Marvel MO more recently, trying to make more sympathetic, air quote, villains. But this movie, as much good as there is, once again has a villain problem. There's a really bad dude, but something is just missing again. But while we see these moments of the Widow Squad and their abilities, seeing them all fight our Black Widow, right up until new MCU Black Widow throws a red smoke grenade to set everyone free, the action moments will never feel like a weakness in the entirety of this movie. And thankfully, the despicable Dracov is super blown up and definitely dead. The end is where I was a bit annoyed. Everyone flies off in the distance, the Widows is a freed Taskmaster, the remaining members of her first family. I really hope we get a little something with characters like Red Guardian, who feel like a come-and-gone character to this point. Thankfully, the post-credit scene has a clear direction for Florence Pugh, but no one else really feels that way. What's to become of Taskmaster? I hope there's more, but there's no way of thinking that that's actually the case. And Black Widow seemingly just stays at the crash site with the S.H.I.E.L.D. and General Ross agents converging on her to, I guess, take her into custody? But somehow that doesn't happen? The end is a bit of a miss with a more muddled transition from this movie to the next Avengers Infinity War movie. Seemingly, her and Captain America are on the run at this point, and at some point Captain America comes to break people out, and she is not seen in the background with him in that shot, I just watched it to make sure. But assumedly they broke people out together? They must not have broken out Scott Lang and Hawkeye because they're missing from the following movie. And seemingly, they're on plea deals to be with their families. Ant-Man had his movie, which explained this. Maybe we'll get the same thing with some explanation of how maybe the beginning of Endgame happened, or just any connective threads from that to the Hawkeye series would be super appreciated. They clearly broke out Falcon. That's the three-person team we see in the early stages of Infinity War. Scarlet Witch is the anomaly in this. She is clearly not in jail, and she and Vision are kind of running away from the law and doing their own thing in Scotland when we first see them. So yes, there's a bit of a continuity confusion for me. Maybe it will make more sense when watching Civil War and this at home with everything that follows it up to and including Infinity War. I mean, there has to be some answers coming for these timeline questions. It just felt like there was something left to happen in this movie, and it just didn't happen, unfortunately. Also, I want to talk about music before I forget. Lauren Balfe makes less superhero music and instead goes for action-packed with a depressing aura on it. But easily the best track is Natasha's Lullaby, which I felt like I marathoned a lot the day after watching this movie. It has all of that with Russian haunting tint, and it feels like something out of the animated Anastasia film. The best animated movie Fox ever made. There's a very small list if you're bored, check it on Wikipedia. It's like 5 or 6 movies tops before they all got moved to Disney. It's not an impressive catalog, but Anastasia, quite good. And now it can be watched on Disney Plus after that acquisition by Disney of Fox. If you have not yet, do yourself a favor and watch it. It's like really, really good between the musical stylings, the overall darker-ish story, Rasputin is stronger and spookier than many of those 2D animated villains. It's not a Disney movie, technically, but now it is? It feels right at home with the rest of them, though. I remember having that VHS case at home. The only non-Disney at the time ones I had beside Rugrats in Paris, the Star Wars movies, the first five, I think, and maybe the first two Harry Potters. But before I make an accidental episode all about Anastasia, let's touch on something we all want to. That new post-credits scene to break down. Yes, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is back. That was supposed to be her first initial tease. But instead, we already know her deal and her two appearances in Falcon and the Winter Soldier recruiting John Walker as the U.S. agent. But here she is with Belova at a funeral for Natasha Romanoff post-Endgame. And it is not a true funeral, but it is something that we missed out on in Endgame. So nice that they have some memorial for her. But we see her working for this Contessa Valentia Allegra de Fontaine, or it's implied that is her new employer. And this interaction sets up the conflict in the Hawkeye show. Belova now believes incorrectly that Clint Barton, Hawkeye, is to blame for her sister's death. Not sure if she'll be the main antagonist to Clint and our new hero Kate Bishop, but the conflict will be there for sure, and it's not hard to predict or assume it will all work out in the end and they can become the best of friends, reminiscing of their shared experiences with Natasha Romanoff. I have teased it a few times now. The 24 films are in the MCU, and here it is, the breakdown of all 24 films ranked. Will this change over time? Who knows? But as of this moment, it is what it is. Let's kick it off. Number 24, no surprise. I wanted to leave it open just in case it changed. Thor Dark World, still the worst. Bad villain. Up and down setting, the worst of Thor and the worst of the MCU. 23 and 22 have a couple Iron Man films in there. No, it's not the first one. Iron Man 2 and 3. I love Sam Rockwell's character, Justin Hammer. Absolutely love it. He's not the villain, but as a character, he is super, super fun. But this movie is problematic from a pacing standpoint. A really uninteresting, boring villain, especially coming off how great the first Iron Man villain was. There were some really cool Black Widow fight moments at the very end of the movie, but like, this movie just wasn't it. And I put Iron Man 3 at 22. Look, the Mandarin fake out, Aldrich Killian existing, it's just not it. And with the better protege to Iron Man with Spider-Man, this protege, this kid doesn't really matter now. I know he was included at the funeral in Endgame, but let's be real, kid really doesn't matter. Another villain problem. Love the Christmas setting, but if that Spider-Man No Way Home movie has the Christmas New York setting, this really will fall down to being where it properly sits at 22. 21, The Incredible Hulk. Part of it is the fact that it's super unwatchable for streaming. That's always going to be a hit on it. Part of it is that we have a completely different Incredible Hulk actor. I like Ed Norton in the role. I really did. I think there's nothing wrong with Mark Ruffalo in the role. I think he's also very good. I just liked Ed Norton also in the role, and of course, one and done and gone. I really like Tim Roth. I don't know if Tim Roth's human version will exist. I know the Abomination version will exist, at least in Shang-Chi and somewhere in the She-Hulk series, but I quite like the Tim Roth fight thing. In general, the like fight on the college army part was the best, but a lower third act final of the movie being just a CGI mass fest, just not as good. I still like it, just not as good. Number 20, the tier jumps up a little bit with number 20. With The Incredible Hulk and this film, which will be Captain Marvel. There's nothing wrong with Captain Marvel. The tone is a little too jarring with a little more jokiness. I don't love the hard-handed, don't judge a book by its cover setting. I don't like the reversal of the Kree Skrull battle. I like the beginning third a ton. I like Ben Mendelsohn. I like Jude Law. Brie Larson has great chemistry with everyone. There are some really nice moments with Brie Larson and the Rambos, and I like the Samuel Jackson nostalgia things with young Phil Coulson, even though he's barely used. There's just something missing in this movie, and I think, honestly, at the end of the day, is the true villain. It kind of is a rival. I don't know. It's fine. It's just not as good. Number 19, we've got Thor, the first one. We have our lovely first look at Tom Hiddleston's Loki in this. And Chris Hemsworth feels a little rigid in his first outing as Thor. And in general, Asgard is, for a super populated world, not super exciting. Some of the fighting is super fun, especially the stuff on the Frost Trolls world, but the human stuff is kind of okay. The jokes are a little too much. It's same thing as with Captain Marvel. Over time, certain movies have just done things better, not because of Thor, but they've kind of learned from some of the mistakes and have gotten much better, including one of the best movies in the franchise is that first version of like a really good, fun Thor movie that's action-packed and kind of globe universe-trotting. Number 18, I'm surprised at the time thinking this movie is as bad as it is, but there are the jokes in Avengers Age of Ultron really hurt this movie. I don't remember thinking it the first time I watched it, but once you notice like how annoying the jokes are, you can't unnotice it. And Age of Ultron killing off like one main guy, and it was a guy that we didn't really ever know. It felt like they only included Quicksilver just to kill someone off so they didn't have to kill off any of their main characters, because they had to have someone had to die in this movie, because no one really died in the first Avengers movie. And the stakes only matter if there's some semi-permanence to them. So, still fun. I think Andy Serkis, anytime he's on camera, is great. This included, James Spader is a lot of fun in the role, but the writing kills this movie. It is painful writing. Number 17 and 16, I'll just throw them both out there. Just like the Iron Mans, we have the Ant-Mans at 17, 16. I think Ant-Man and the Wasp might be a more fun watch, but the villain problem for sure exists. I think Ant-Man still has a ton of great humor. I think Ant-Man's actually pretty underrated. And at least the villain may not be perfect, but there is at least a clear villain and a reason. And look, having watched a lot of The Strain recently, my appreciation for Corey Stoll continues to grow. I just think the first movie did a little more with what it had, and the second one was so much fun. Like, they're both fun watches. I definitely watch them both, and I would continue to watch them both. But once again, if you're comparing them from everything Marvel's done, you gotta put it where it is. Number 15, our newest entry, Black Widow. So a little less than the halfway point, I would say. A lot of fun. The action is amazing. The tone is amazing. I really like this movie, but that villain problem of just having one existing. There's a reason I have Ant-Man and the Wasp and Black Widow so close together, because they have the same issue of not having a real villain in this sense of trying to make people sympathetic and kind of likable. But really cool movie. Definitely go watch it. And I would say watch it in the theaters if your health safety standards can do that. Still haven't done a Disney Premiere Plus Access, whatever it's called, film yet. So I don't really see that coming. I'm going to wait for Cruella to be available for me without having to pay any extra money. That's my plan. Number 14, Doctor Strange was a really visually cool movie. I really like the trajectory of Benedict Cumberbatch, especially as it parallels Iron Man and Tony Stark. The mystical angle was cool. Yeah, the Tilda Swinton stuff is hit or miss, however you want to classify that. I really like Mads Mikkelsen as an actor, and he has some moments in this movie that are good. This movie looks really cool, and it is a lot of fun. But the same issue of the villain problem. And at the end of the day, the big bad is Dormammu, who is like a floating head in the negative energy version of our world, and it's just glossed over. Really cool movie, just a poor ending execution. Hopefully the sequel was better, and I'm super excited for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. It's actually interesting to think that we have three movies that, while not all in the exact same franchise, they all have a very similar feel to them. 13, 12, and 11 on our list. So right outside the top 10 I have. Number 13, Guardians of the Galaxy. Number 12, Thor Ragnarok. Number 11, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. They're all very fun. The goofy, over-the-top humor is very late in the knees. There's some emotional stakes. I think there's more emotional stakes, honestly, in either Guardian film compared to Thor Ragnarok, which is actually pretty surprising, obviously. But why did I order them the way they are? Guardians of the Galaxy, love the music in the franchise. That, for sure, was something very different, and Oldies Nick was all about that. Michael Roker, great. The main Guardians cast, great. The issue, guess it, guess what it is? There's a villain problem. There's a generic, boring villain that does evil things, and that's it. The globetrotting is fun. The movie is good. I just don't care about the villain, even though it did give Thanos a little more to do. Not a ton, but it was a better introduction to Thanos than any of the post-credit teasers that we had gotten up to this point. Thor Ragnarok, easily the best of the Thor films. There is no question. Tom Hiddleston is his best. Chris Hemsworth is his best. They get rid of a lot of characters quickly. I always appreciated Josh Dallas's version of Frandall over Zachary Levi's, just putting it out there. But he did a phenomenal superhero job, of course, in Shazam. So he has that going for him. They pretty quickly got rid of Lady Sif, and eventually we're going to see her again, which I've talked about a few times on here. I just want my connective threads, and they never really figured it out. Valkyrie was a great ad. Bringing Mark Ruffalo and Thor into a movie outside of the Avengers story with Civil War does give some love to our original six Avengers characters, so it's nice that all these things exist. And of course, the tie there works perfectly going into the Infinity War final two-part film saga. Thor Ragnarok, really good, but the issue, again, the villain just wasn't as exciting or interesting as I would have hoped for with Hela. Just a missed opportunity. We get a little closer to the things we're looking for with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. The ads are nice. Kurt Russell, phenomenal in the role of Peter Quill's estranged dad. He's an evil guy, and the charisma evil balance is very nice. There's something missing. As much as I want to like this character in this conflict, I like moments of the conflict with this bad guy, the eventual reveal. It just is a lot to get there, and eventually becomes a doomsday world type movie in the very end. Now, music is on point. They do so much more with Michael Roker, and the dad storyline is really nice here of your who your father versus who your biological father was versus who your dad was. It's a very interesting angle. The villain's closer here, but there's just something just keeping out of the top 10. Number 10, we're out to the top 10, and I wish I could put this movie higher. We get to a point where most of these movies on this list are enjoyable. Even Thor Dark World has some enjoyable moments, and same with the two Iron Man one-off solo movies. But these are obviously much better. That's why they're in the top 10. Spider-Man Far From Home does so much good with the Jake Gyllenhaal bad guy that is like an Iron Man knockoff Thor combo that has the interesting The Boys angle of the world adopts superheroes because they want to believe them because there's so many wacky things. The coming of age story is really exciting for Spider-Man. It's growing from the first Spider-Man film that we had, and it's a good movie, and the really cool globetrotting stuff is fun. Sure, it's a little goofy at times, and for the most part, it works. So J.B. Smoove and Martin Starr are hilarious comedic timing actors I have here. I think something is just missing. Same thing. Really good movie, really enjoyable movie, but when you compare it to, I think, the rest of the list, you can tell it's just a slight tear down from everything else. Number 9, the movie that started it all is unfortunately this low on the list, but Iron Man... so good. Jeff Bridges was such a good first villain of sympathetic mentor to revealed menacing villain to having his own self-serving needs. And his evil turn looks so good on camera. This movie is really good. Do I think they do more and better things with Robert Downey Jr. as they go? Absolutely. But the plight and issue of him having like a car battery to keep his heart alive and seeing his eventual growth, it all starts from this movie. And all the role players, the villain, the hero, the sidekicks, I really like Terrence Howard in the role. Once again, Don Cheadle is great, but Terrence Howard, I would have really liked to see it, but we wouldn't have had Empire, so pros and cons. But there's so much to like in the first Iron Man movie. But how can it compare to number 8, The Avengers? As much as the writing is same issues as the other Avengers movie that followed it, but we have so much good with Loki. We have this final big moment of, you know, our original core six members kicking butt and just doing really good fight stuff. I don't know how exciting all of the helicarrier stuff is, but that New York City battle is always going to be such a moment for Avengers fans. And at that point, we had never seen anything quite like that. There were some really close parts with X-Men. I'm sure the Dark Knight trilogy had some really good set piece moments, but just the sheer number of known characters all fleshed out and doing really cool things. I don't know. That was such a moment that we all really liked in theaters. And they had some really good Nick Fury stuff. And of course, Clark Gregg's Agent Coulson, this character we kind of grown into liking in the early first phase of this dying, stakes aplenty. Just a good movie, but the writing kind of let it down a little bit. I really don't like having this low, because I really think Spider-Man Homecoming is a really good movie with one of the most relatable and best villains of the MCU entirely, with Michael Keaton returning to the superhero genre as the Vulture. Having Iron Man having a physical presence in the growth and development of Spider-Man. And this Spider-Man feels like a high school kid, not a 30-year-old or, you know, a college-age kid or someone who's talking about marriage. It's a kid, Spider-Man, coming into his own. And it's so good, and it builds on the character that we meet early in Civil War for a bit. And this solo outing is so, so good. It's so much fun. I hope they do a little more with Donald Glover's character. I don't know if he'll exist. They have a lot of storylines they have to deal with now, how Far From Home gets us going. But Spider-Man Homecoming is amazing. And I really hope those two Spider-Man movies end up on Disney Plus sooner rather than later, just to be accessible. Because as much as I can pop open Blu-rays and DVDs to watch stuff, it's really nice having it all on Disney Plus. Number 6, Captain America Civil War. In general, as you can probably tell, 3 of the top 6 are going to be Captain America movies. He was a hero I grew to like more and more compared to anyone else early in MCU after my X-Men fandom took me to the next logical destination. Civil War is really good. Like I say many times, it's Avengers 2.5. The Black Panther intro is phenomenal. More Chadwick Boseman the better, especially now knowing what we know in the real world, unfortunately. Really fun fighting. Only reason it's as low as it is, same issue as some of the other Avengers movies. No, there's no stakes, you know. There's the emotional tear apart, which does have impacts lasting in Infinity War, in Endgame, and they talk about it a bit in Black Widow. But the fact that no one really died in Civil War is, oh, it's frustrating to have the really good movie and just the stakes seemingly don't exist. And I also like that that's our last send-off of Brock Rumlow, who I think is very good. Like the actor Frank Grillo in a lot of stuff, only had 2 movies with him, a little stint in the Endgame arc with had everyone's swan song, but really good movie. Of course, it gave us Daniel Brühl's Zemo, who unfortunately doesn't have as much to do as I would like. The deleted scene there is embarrassingly not included, I guess, to the same that Spider-Man Far From Home has a missing thing. But thankfully, his character was given new life in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Very unexpectedly, but very amazing new life. I love World War II, World War I, period piece stories. And there's a reason I think the first Wonder Woman did so well, because it really has a good tie into its war scene. I think the exact same thing is the case with Captain America the First Avenger. So much good. The special effects for Chris Evans still looks pretty good. Haley Atwell as Peggy Carter. Sebastian Stan, phenomenal as Bucky, and obviously a much smaller role compared to what we see him in later on. Just the setting is good, and I really like Dominic Cooper. Tommy Lee Jones is in this World War movie guy who's in every war period piece, apparently. And, of course, let's not forget Hugo Weaving, Elrond, and Agent Smith is a really good German scientist bad guy for the Nazi regime. Obviously, the Nazi thing gets kind of pushed to the side pretty quickly, and I understand why, and it makes sense for the character. But this is a super fun, super good movie. It just, the only reason it's lesser compared to what we have next in the top 4 is because they're all just bigger. There's some really big movies in the final 4. Number 4, you may be surprised this is as low as it is. Avengers Endgame. Now, if you listen to my Phase 3 Part 2 episode, this may not be as surprising. The action, the nostalgia, there is a ton of good moments in Avengers Endgame. The only reason it's as low as it is because they do weird things with Thor and Hulk. It's unfortunate because this is a really good movie, and I love having all of the characters from S.H.I.E.L.D. that were Hydra in that 2012 version of New York. We have a little more Loki. We have just so many things. And of course, that end of, you know, you see this dark, depressing world after that Thanos snap. And when everyone finally comes back to life, the On Your Left, all the portals opening up, Cap being worthy of the hammer. There's so much good payoff here. But they do those really weird things with Hulk and Thor, and I never will understand why they did that. It was such a weird choice. Like, if that wasn't there, this might have eclipsed my number one movie. It didn't, but it would have been really, really close then. Top 3, we're really getting down to the wire. Captain America Winter Soldier, what a movie for Phase 2. Like, you had a very whatever Iron Man 3, a very bad Thor movie, but you had this gem of political intrigue and government corruption and the Hydra living within S.H.I.E.L.D. There were so many cool things. A ton more with Scarlett Johansson, more Nick Fury. I love Emily Van Camp. There's that weird kind of kissing the niece of the woman you love thing that kind of has the same, like, kissing your sibling Star Wars thing going on a little bit, but take that out of the equation. And of course, we have Frank Grillo. And I think Robert Redford does an amazing job as our, like, overarching villain, especially because there's so many different bit players in there. You got Brock Rumlow and just the whole Hydra thing. You got Shadow Government guy, but he seems menacing just because he controls Winter Soldier, which I guess feels weird thinking about that versus Black Widow, but I don't know. I don't know why is that different? Maybe just because there's more going on outside of that in this world? I don't know. And also, I think just Scarlett Johansson and Chris Evans really have good chemistry together, and this is the one movie that really brings them together. Like, Black Widow and Scarlett Johansson was cool in Iron Man 2, but they didn't really play her character right. They did weird things with her character. I feel like this feels so much more natural. Two movies left, Black Panther and Avengers Infinity War. You probably know where I'm going with this. Two Black Panther, one Avengers Infinity War. Black Panther was that good. I don't know if anyone thought it was going to be that good, but it really was that good. The music, be it orchestral or Kendrick Lamar, Chadwick Boseman was so good in the role. I love Andy Serkis. Michael B. Jordan was such a good villain. We have Loki, Thanos, Adrian Toomes, and Killmonger. I don't know if I have the order of those four villains figured out, but those are easily the best four villains. There really shouldn't be a question. Oh, Black Panther, the visuals, the excitement, the world was so good. They went to cool, fun places. The action was good. Danai Gurira, Lupita Nyong'o, Angela Bassett, the cast list on this is insane. Martin Freeman's even thrown in there. There is so much good with Black Panther. It really is that good. The only reason it can't be number one is because Avengers Infinity War has everything. Avengers Infinity War is the movie that Endgame wanted to be, but they didn't have the jokes are always going to be a part of Marvel, for better or worse. Sometimes they're good. I like a little joke, but the stakes and team-ups in Avengers Infinity War feel right out of, like, Saturday morning cartoons with all these characters all being fully realized, all existing. The two battles, the special effects, like the war on Wakanda versus the aliens versus Thanos versus a bunch of heroes on his home world of Titan. Like, so much good happens in Infinity War. You can't not love it. It has to be the best movie. The only issue is I don't know if anyone can ever top Infinity War because it's that good. There you have it. There's my list. I hope you enjoyed it. Yes. Before I forget, our Letterboxd score for this latest MCU romp. I'm going to try to do these a little more with newer movies. The introduction of Phase 4 still feels like its own movie. That still, timeline-wise, of course, fits into the Infinity War saga. There's way more pressure on Shang-Chi, but I think the solo outing and send-off for Black Widow is strong. A bit mired with the villain problem, and a few of the jokes do fall flat, but the main small cast is super good. The darker action, the ideas pushed here are amazing to watch, and a breath of fresh air, truly unique for Marvel's universe. And David Harbour is hilarious, Florence Pugh is great to boot. Heck, Taskmaster looks cool. The payoff is a little iffy for me, but it does work with the themes. So let's throw up a 3.5 star rating for this one. But now that you have all 24 films ranked for yours truly, after this 5-episode series coming to a close, how did I do? Where do you rank all these films? Do you have a favorite? What'd you think of Black Widow? Let me know all this and more on social. It's gotta be knickknack_IC or knickknackmovies. For all your Marvel and pop culture content. Hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, or Letterboxd. I'm going to try to push that really hard. Well, that's all for me, so cheers, and until next time, cinephiles.
Are you not entertained?
I think this is going to be the beginning of a beautiful friendship. I don't like goodbyes. Let's just call this see you later, alligator.